Welcome to Don't Talk to Strangers, a true crime podcast. We are your hosts, Hannah Elizabeth
and Kate Mitchell. This is a place where you can find true crime tales, morbid mysteries and all things spooky.
We are two Scousers with a true crime and red wine passion. Expect wine reviews, Scouse banter and much more.
Our podcast does include graphic content and explicit language. Discretion is advised.
So grab a bevy, it's about to get heavy. Elizabeth.
And I am Kate Mitchell.
And this is Don't Talk to Strangers.
Episode four. Cuatro.
What are you? So how have you been, girl? On the build up to Halloween.
It's spooky season. Well, to be fair, when this comes out, it depends how quick you listen to them, but it hopefully will launch on Halloween. Then that means by the time I listen to this, it might be November sometime, but still, it's still spooky season.
It's still cozy season. Oh, yeah.
It's still the best time of the year.
We've got the Halloween black tree up. Yeah. We've got the spider webs.
Which I'm terrified of.
Yeah, she's terrified. I've got a big, massive wooden spider next to her. We're themed up. We've got a red wine.
Yes.
Which is...
Right, let me get this up.
It's actually a favourite of mine from the Yellowtails.
Yeah, Hannah always buys this one.
My friend, actually, Rach, she is fussy about red and she will only drink this Malbec. Like, it's the green label.
It's Yellowtail Malbec. Now...
dead cheap.
Hannah bought it from the bargain booze and can't remember how much she actually paid for it. But I've looked online and at the minute it's kind of like the whole... hang on, sorry. I found it for an average of £7.
And you can get two in the bargain booze for 12.
In the bargain booze. Well, it's from Australia.
Takes a sip.
And it's rich and velvety with notes of ripe berries, dark chocolate and a hint of spice.
Fit.
It is actually delicious. Like, it's so funny when we read these descriptions out because I'm thinking not once did I taste chocolate.
I got velvety.
You got velvety as a taste? That's a texture.
Yeah, texture.
But it is velvety. I'm trying to find what it says what it's nice with, but... does it say...
it's dead funny because we don't actually know.
No, we have to, like, Google it or read... read the bottle. But it just says, great taste and Australian wine for everyone to enjoy. So, we highly recommend Yellowtail.
So, don't know if
Malbec.
You care, but the green labelled Yellowtail. And you can't actually get it in all supermarkets. Like, they always stock the Merlot and the Shiraz. But the Malbec, I find it, it's not as thingy to get older. But when you see the green one, make sure you try it.
It's like, it's like a teal colour.
Teal.
But anyway, it's got unreal. I'm on the Sainsbury's website.
You should have brought the bottle in.
And it's got unreal reviews. So, 5 out of 5. So, we recommend this one, honeys. But anyway, this episode.
Oh my god. Okay, so this episode is my episode. And this is actually a case, right? Wait till we get into it. But it was a local Liverpool case, which is why I wanted to do it. But there's actually a big, massive twist that I'm going to tell you at the end, which will blow your socks off. So before we even did this podcast, Kate doesn't know a lot of the details about this case, but one of the first things when we met each other, I was telling her this story.
Yeah.
Because I would just say, without giving it away, it's quite...
it's close to home.
It's close to home.
Very. Because basically, like, obviously, as we've explained, I think in episode one, like, how we met and, like... we had the same interests, whatever. We were telling each other, like, not our stories, because not that we were all involved in true crime, but about cases we love and all these different things. And then Hannah just went, oh my god, babe, have you heard of the name which I'm about to tell you? Have you heard of him? And I was like, oh no, why? And she was like, haven't you? He's from Liverpool, he did this and this. And then she told me the connection. And I was like, stop. And then we obviously went straight onto the Google, started Google imaging him. Because you'll do the same, I guarantee you, after this. Because
it's actually one of them stories that I just tell everyone, like, I can't believe it.
Yeah, no, it's a crazy... because the thing is, all these cases that that most podcasts cover or whatever, generally people know about them, and this one people will know about.
Mm-hmm.
People will know
like
about.
You will have heard about it probably on the news, and there has been some programmes about it and stuff like that.
Especially if you're from Liverpool or England. But I actually didn't know much about it at all, which I was shocked at, because it's a similar age group. But But yeah, it's just...
Can I put my leg on yours?
Yes, we're on the couch, we're just trying to get comfy. But you can put your leg on me, don't you worry.
Do you know what? I actually feel so cosy. I do.
We've got the scene.
It's the red wine season as well now, yeah. So that's it. Loads of true crime, loads of red wine.
We've got the good lighting, we've got the ambience.
We are, but yeah, I'm just so excited to tell you this, and then I can't wait to fill yous all in at the end.
I know. And the thing is, it's the first time Hannah's done... like research on something.
Oh my god.
And made notes on things.
Yeah, it fell
off,
I'm not gonna lie.
And
I was up all night, and then I had to like try and finish this morning. I got writer's block. Yeah. So I had to stop.
Soz JK Rowling. Are you messing with writer's block? No, she messaged me going, Kate, I've got this Mac, right? How to copy and paste. And no, I was out at a meal and I was thinking, oh, here
copy
we go.
Is C and paste is V.
Command C, yeah. No, I know. It is mad, but as soon as she said that, I thought she's going to have an absolute nightmare.
So imagine me, I can't even use this MacBook, and I'm trying to do the research. Oh, my God.
And she hasn't got Word on it. And, like, I was thinking to her, trying to explain Google Docs, but then she's done it on notes,
hell
and I
no.
thought, that's fine, but...
I mean, I didn't even know how to get anything up.
But you've done it, and it's fine. It's
hope
all good.
Please.
It will.
It'll improve from me again.
It'll be absolutely fine. And as we've said, this is the very beginning. We don't know what we're doing, so...
Yeah. So I hope I tell the story well. So especially if you are from Liverpool or from around, yeah, you will have probably heard it, or your mums and dads will be like, I remember that on the news,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Because it weren't that long ago, really. And as I say, it's your age group, isn't it? More than mine.
Yeah.
You're a little bit older than me, but
yeah.
It's not in too, like, it's just
like
very close to home.
4 years older.
Yeah, but... So, go on, who is it?
Dum, dum, dum. Okay, so today I am going to be telling you the story of Brian Blackwell, who was a young lad from Liverpool who actually butchered his mum and dad to death.
Lovely, as you do.
Okay, so shall we get into it?
Yeah, go on.
Okay,
I've got my wine ready, so go.
I can't wait to fill you in on this, Kate. So, Brian Blackwell was born in 1986 in West Lancashire.
Okay.
He was an only child, mm-hmm. just like myself.
I love how we automatically try and, like, relate ourselves to people, and it's like, should we try and do this? Like, what?
We try.
We try, but why?
I know,
anyway,
yeah.
Go on.
So, he was an only child. His parents were Jacqueline Blackwell and Sydney Blackwell. He had from... you know, everything, every bit of, like, documentary or research I've done on him, he had a really nice childhood. Like, his mum and dad, they were quite, like, older, cute parents, mm-hmm. do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They doted on him, they kind of spoilt him. Some people would say they were a bit overindulgent with him.
So they had money?
They had money. They just wanted him to kind of, like... be the best that he could be. And where he was an only child...
That does happen, I think.
Yeah, you know.
You're a spoiled.
He's spoiled, yes, of course.
I was going to call you a brat then, but I didn't want to be mean, but you are a brat.
Yeah, I am a brat. He was spoiled and he had everything that he ever... you know, the best of the best. I mean,
yeah.
There was no signs of abuse, no sexual abuse, no nothing like that in his childhood. They lived in a little village called Melling in the northern suburbs of Liverpool, which is obviously the best city in the world, but... I don't actually know where Melling is, do you?
I've heard of it, but I don't know. I don't think I've ever been.
I imagine it to be quite posh. I don't know why, just because I think they were a bit minted, but... So his parents were described from other people as being a nice, solid, like, you know, strong couple, really nice people. As far as anyone knows, you know, like I said, he has a really good upbringing and... they just doted on his every need and spoiled him. They were known, I think this is quite normal with only children as well, because with me, it certainly was. They were very overprotective of Brian and kind of like controlling in like every little minor aspect of his life throughout his childhood. But mm-hmm. I feel like I was...
yeah, but that's not a bad thing.
I was very overprotected, and then it kind of made me rebel, but not obviously to a point
well,
where
yeah.
it killed me mum and dad. But,
you know. Well, this is the thing as well, because, like, again, when me and Han like, talk about, like, memories and stuff, like, her memories are similar to mine, because obviously everyone has that growing up stage where you drink when you're underage and whatever. Hannah's is a little bit different to mine,
yeah.
But it's similar, and I think that happens with everyone. Like,
yeah.
I, my mum and dad, but not... I always say they were strict, they weren't. I just had mates that had mum and dads that would be a bit more allowing of certain things, mm-hmm. like drinking something, like, it's fine as long as you do it under our roof, whereas my mum was just like, no. Do you know what I mean? So I'd obviously be like, mum, I'm going to stay in me mate. I don't want to say in pure grassy people, but I'm going to go stay in mate. And she'd be like, oh, okay. And I'd be like, yeah, we're just going to have a sleepover. And I'd be rotten, vomiting in the garden. But we were all safe. It was fine. It's what kids do these days, innit?
Yeah, of course. I mean, so Brian was seen by, you know, other kids and stuff as a dead gentle lad. A bit of a, I wouldn't say geek, but he was a little bit of a loner. Didn't make friends too easily, kind of thing.
Right.
Wasn't bullied or anything, but just wasn't, you know, the most popular lad, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Found it quite hard to make friends at home, like, you know, around where he lived and in school and things like that. But in a school, which is actually, this is another thing that is fucking insane, he went to Liverpool College.
See, that blows my mind. I don't think it's a private school anymore, is it?
I'm not sure, but it
was a private school
and
in Liverpool.
It's literally, what, like 15 minutes away?
Yeah, and it's not far at all. But yeah, it's, I mean, I know a few people, like, I mean, I'm not friends, I don't know them closely, but I know a few people who I went to school with who went on to go to Liverpool College. And
when I hung around, like, the street, like, when you hang around the park when you're younger, Liverpool College kids were, like, posh.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
All the clever posh kids.
Yeah, so at school he was a proper, like, grade A, sick student, basically. He was dead, dead clever. And in his teens, he was actually nicknamed the Brains by his friends. He was proper smart, switched on. He studied for his A-levels there at Liverpool College. And he'd actually decided that he wanted to become a medical surgeon.
Who what?
His doting and supportive parents had proper high hopes for the son, believing that he had the potential to go on and become this, you know, amazing surgeon. They supported him with all his studies, mm-hmm. and like I said, he was hitting all these grades. He was proper clever, smart. Okay, so we said in his childhood that obviously there wasn't any kind of, like, weirdness in terms of, like,
there wasn't, like, things of concern.
There wasn't, like, neglect, sexual, anything like that. But from a young age, Brian was known to be a pathological liar. So, basically, he loved chatting shit. So, the thing with
that's
Brian,
the medical term, by the way. Yeah. You didn't know it was chatting shit.
He was... You are going to come to realise that Bri was the biggest shit chatter and exaggerator. So,
yeah,
he used to like to make himself sound better. Everything he did, mm-hmm. he wanted people to believe that he'd done things he hadn't.
So, like, if you went to Tenerife, he went to 11 a reef.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One of them. But, like, to the extreme, okay?
Yeah, okay.
So that's, like, an important thing we need to kind of, like,
remember
that. Okay. Ever since anyone can remember, kind of thing with Brian, he was a pathological liar.
Okay.
Which can obviously be a dangerous trait.
Yes.
So he met his girlfriend at school, who was called Amal Saba. It's hard to say with the Scouse accent. Amal Saba.
See, I'd say Saba.
Okay.
But, well, we
Amal
don't know.
Saba.
Okay.
So he met his girlfriend, so she was a gorgeous, dead pretty girl. She also, you know, like I said, went to his school. She was 17, and she was actually, listen to this, Kate, she was from Childwall.
Oh, which is again, around the corner.
Literally around the corner.
Yeah.
Okay, so Brian, when he met Amal, he took a massive liking to this girl, and he wanted to impress her straight away. He was, you know, wooing her. Is that the word?
Yeah.
Wooing her with all these lies, basically, to get her to fall for him and to impress her. You might think that's a bit cute, really. I think, bless him, he's a bit of an
effort
eagle.
Is cute. No, effort is cute.
Yeah.
But lying is not. So it's a very, like, blurred area. Do you know what I mean? Because, like, you can say, oh, my God, he's doing all this. But when it's all lies...
Yeah,
that's scary.
Of course.
And we know some of those.
Yeah, of course.
Sure.
So he was, you know, really liked this girl and was trying to, you know, really impress her. Okay, so one of Bri's big, like, hobbies.
Can I also say, I love that Hannah's like, oh, Bri.
I know, Bri. I literally feel like an
she calls him Bri.
I just, like,
it makes
them
me howl because, like, We did that with Jeff. We were like, you know, so Jeff did this.
I know,
and
it's like, feel well, like he's my bed, you know?
It's Brian, but okay.
Because I've been freaking researching the phase.
Go on. So, Bri.
Okay, so one of Bri's, like, massive things was he was really, really good at tennis. He loved tennis. He used to attend, like, the local tennis club with his dad, mm-hmm. the tennis club. He was part of the team and stuff. And he was good at tennis, but nowhere near as good as he was in his own head.
So
he was sick at tennis, but he wasn't a pro at tennis.
Yeah.
He exaggerated and played on his love for tennis. So, like I said, he was good, but he wasn't boss. Mm-hmm. So he was actually offered a small sponsorship by a tennis, like quite a big tennis brand. But it was their kind of lower sponsorship that they would offer.
Like a lower level.
Which would...
So it's like not the Premier League.
No, not at all. Like it was like he could get a discount off tennis clothes or...
If he wore the top or whatever
sometimes he could get like free tennis clothes. But he made out that he had this big like massive deal.
Yeah.
So this was one massive thing that he played on with his lies to Amal. He played on the tennis thing. He told her he was a professional tennis player.
Right.
He also told her that Nike had sponsored him and give him a sponsorship deal worth £70,000 and a place in the French Open. He also told her, I don't know if I know this fella, but I don't know if I'm saying his name right, but he also told her that he was like friends and had met this
Roger Federer. I know you mean.
Him. So, yeah, he'd, you know, told all this to Amal, and there was no reason, really, why she wouldn't believe that, because he was quite good at tennis. So, things started happening with Brian. Along with these lies, he started doing, on the side, quite a lot. To do with money in order to kind of fund these lies that he was telling.
So he's saying, I've got 70 grand.
Yeah, he's
and
saying
he's like,
got,
shit, I need to...
But shit, I haven't, do you know
you
what I
need
mean?
To live up to it.
And he's a young lad, but they're like 17, so how his mind did all this, it's insane. So behind his mum and dad's back, he applied for 13 credit cards in his dad's name.
13,
yeah.
Jeez.
He also tried... Like, one time he actually went into the bank and told them that he was a famous professional tennis player. He told them he needed a bank loan to play in the French Open. And he made up that, you know, he was on a salary of 45 grand a year. He told them that his dad had died and he needed to borrow money. Obviously, these things didn't always work out.
Yeah.
The thing with Bri as well... As we learn, like, later on, he was, like, a real, like, narcissistic person.
Yeah, I was going to say, that kind of comes with when you're a liar.
It's like...
a pathological liar.
He believed...
That goes hand in hand.
He really believed his own lies.
Yeah,
like,
they do.
He believed
it's
that
bonkers.
He was so confident. Like, if me or you went into the bank and said, like, look, I'm a professional rapper. I want, like, 200 grand. Like,
no,
we know
we
that
would
we'd
go
get
to pieces.
PB. Like,
yeah,
we would be getting it.
Yeah.
But whereas, like, Brian genuinely thought this was possible and that he could get away with it. He thought he was invincible. Another time, he'd even asked Amal to be his manager. This was in April 2004. And he, you know, he said, I'm going to give you a job. I want you to manage me. And he actually wrote her out a salary cheque for £39,000. So he wrote out the cheque and gave it to her, despite only having 9 pence in his bank account at the time.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So
that's me every week. I'm gonna, when I want
yeah,
to
no,
like,
yeah,
like online shopping, and then I'm like, oh, okay.
On Amazon Prime, ordered an absolute shite for the kitchen, like potato peelers and the lot. Especially after a few reds.
Hannah's terrible for ordering things rotten.
Shit on but, Amazon Prime, but it's shit.
See, I've never... I bought a guitar in lockdown rotten because I was convinced myself I was going to teach myself how to play it. Lol.
Sorry, I'm pouring a glass, guys. Would you like one?
I'll have a top up, yeah. But actually, well, I'm driving, so tiny one. But
clink,
what's it called? Hannah fully orders like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pounds worth of things and forgets because she's rotten. And then like 3 days later, she's like, oh, what's this?
I order really random things for the kitchen and stuff. And
tell household goods.
I could go into this spiderweb sitch, but I mean...
okay, yeah. No, Hannah, sorry, this is digressing a little bit, but it's relevant. So it's spooky season. Hannah obviously takes everything to the extreme and like decorates a whole house. She's got a tree, like a Christmas tree, but it's black. And it's got all Halloween things. She's got a
Ouija board planchette in the middle.
Yeah, like, you know, like that
it's
level.
Jack Skeleton all
She's
over
got
it.
A massive spider that I can't look at going up a fireplace. Anyway, she wanted outside this big massive web going from a roof to the floor with a big massive spider on. And she sent me a picture of it and was like, Kate, afford this. And I was like, sick.
And I asked my friend, could she lend me like a fog machine? So in my head, I was like Kim Kardashian and Kanye West. I was having this like LA house where it was going to be like, you'd be driving.
All the people would come.
I was going to do gravestones like fog going over like Thriller. And I could just envision this web, right?
No, but she sent me a picture of it. And I was like, oh my God, yes, Anne, look, boss. Like, what do you like? Do you know what I mean? I didn't ask her how much.
I got so excited.
I didn't, like, ask any more questions. I just went, oh, my God, yeah, that'll be sick. I can't wait to see it. And then I'm thinking in my head, well, that must be a few bob, like, but anyway. And then today she goes, oh, babe, it came, and it was, like, the size of, like, a dinner plate.
Oh, my God, it was tiny, and they had me right off on the picture, like, 28 quid.
That's the funniest thing is, why did you think you're going to get some LA, like, scene for £28? Like, more fool you. Because number one, check the measurements, that's the first rule.
But measurements mean nothing to me.
No, they do.
I looked at the picture, it was fucking from the roof down to the floor the size of the window.
People like you fall for these traps.
I'm thick. And I sent it back anyway, it was fucking huge.
£28, who thinks of getting that? Anyway,
so my Halloween's been ruined for the year. Me dreams of, you know, an LA
extravaganza.
Hollywood.
£28.
Yeah, I mean, they failed, but just wait for the weekend because I'm going to do good, but just not on the outside.
Yeah, all on the inside. That's all that counts, isn't it? Go on.
Okay, so I just told you, obviously, that he'd asked her to be his manager and he'd routed out this check for like 39 grand. The check, obviously, to Amal, when she tried to cash it in, it bounced due to the lack of funds. So, I mean, what a tip. He genuinely, there's a screw missing. He genuinely thinks
that
I wouldn't even do that because I'd think, well, I'm just going to get made a tit off. But he didn't think like that.
No.
So it bounced. But he was desperate to keep up the bullshit.
Yeah.
So what he did was, he then went back to the bank in May 2004 and he withdrew £9,000 from an investment account that his parents had set up for him.
Right.
It was like a bond that they'd set up for him.
When he was like a kid or something.
Yeah, I don't know how he had access to it or I'm not sure, but this was meant to pay for his university education and he took £9,000 out of it. He convinced the bank to give him the money, telling them he then told them that his father had died and he needed to get access to the money because he needed to buy himself a car.
Not to like pay for the funeral and look after someone.
He needed a car. He ended up getting the £9,000. I mean, things must have been a bit different then because you just wouldn't do that. You wouldn't get away with that now.
No, but we don't know the situation. If it's an account in his name, that his mum and dad set up for him and he's older coming in.
Surely they could just check if his dad's alive.
Well, you'd think, yeah. True.
So he ended up getting the £9,000 out. Yeah. And he used the money to buy a Ford KA
for six and a half grand. Wait a minute. So he said I was getting a car, but he actually was getting a car and he bought a Ford KA.
Yeah, for £6,500 for his beard.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. So, I mean, I'm not wrong with it, but I thought if he was going to get a car, it would be different, but okay.
So why he'd done that was because the cheque had bounced, he needed a...
something to, like, cover it up. Like,
back and forth.
Forget about that, but here's a car, yeah.
I have got money. So at the same time, so he bought her this car, at the same time as buying her this car, he was sending her a lot of, like, extravagant presents. Okay. He was buying her jewellery and telling her that it was, like, real diamonds, but it wasn't. He was sending her, like, a lot of things like this.
Okay.
He also blagged Amal that he had a £450,000 flat in the same complex as Stevie J, Gerrard.
That's Steven Gerrard, for anyone who doesn't know.
She full-on, like, footballer. Believed this. Yeah. But as she, you know what, she's 17. As she would, if he was buying you a car. Yeah. Which at this time, quite like, oh,
that's
sick.
Mega. You wouldn't, you have no reason not to believe him.
You think he's this big tennis player. He's buying you a car.
Yeah.
Well, it is quite like,
he goes to a private school. Yeah. That obviously costs a lot of money to go to.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Okay, so his mum and dad did actually find out about the car and they demanded that Amal give the car back.
Yeah.
But after a lot of arguments that has gone on between Brian, the mum and dad,
yeah,
it was decided that Amal would keep the car, but she would pay the money back. Which is a bit cheeky, really. Like,
no, but the mum and dad are like normal, nice human beings who have gone shit.
It, like, if I was Amal's ma, I'd be like, give the fucking car back. Like, it's cheeky. Like, you wouldn't be like, we're keeping the car, but we'll pay you back in time. When
true.
It's your money.
You'd just give it back, wouldn't you?
Of course you would. But Brian actually had kicked off to his mum and dad and said, well, that's insulting to me. It's like making a show of me that you're making her give the car back. Like, it's a show. Do you know what I mean? That's
but
what
then it's
saying.
Worse. Is it Sam where they're paying for it?
Yeah.
But jeez. Anyway. Whatever.
Okay, so in June of 2004, Mrs. Blackwell discovered a lot more of the deceit that had been going on. So she went to the bank manager and actually tried to say, look, if, you know, Bri comes back in, I'm really worried about his behaviour regarding, like, finances and money. Like, he's just out of control at the minute. So
I'm surprised he didn't, like, gamble and...
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? There's so many other ways to, like, make money. Drugs
or, do you know what I mean?
Could have went down loads of different avenues to But if he's not, I was going to say, if he's not in that crowd or knows about it, then I suppose,
yeah.
Yeah,
he isn't going to fucking clean down. So even though he's posh, he's like, what's it called, mollycoddled.
No,
like,
but it's just because you're posh, you can still be
a
criminal.
He doesn't have a clue.
But he hasn't got a clue, yeah.
So even though now his mum and dad do know kind of what he's up to, he didn't care. That didn't stop him because... I suppose when you're that much of a liar, your, like, want to, like, meet these liars is more than giving a shit if your mum and dad are in a mood with you. Like, you're trying to impress someone that much, that's all that matters. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He needs
to keep up with the liars, not care about what his mum and dad are moaning at him about.
So the lies, they were getting more and more out of control. He was so convincing to everyone around him, especially to Amal. It is said later on, obviously down the line, when Brian was, you know, found out and stuff, that notes were even found in his house where he'd wrote down all of his lies, because obviously to be a good liar...
Oh, to remember them?
You need to remember them. So he wrote down in a notebook his lies so that he could keep on top of them.
That's
because when you're a liar, if you tell that many lies, you're going to catch yourself up because...
Yeah. Because all it takes is for someone to ask a question and then you blow yourself up within a second.
So they say to be a good liar, you need a good memory. So Brian actually wrote these down. What he told Amal, he wrote down.
Jeez.
Brian had also promised Amal a first class trip to America.
Okay.
He told her that his fake sponsors, Nike, they were going to fund the whole trip.
Okay.
So they were going to fly him, like, business class. They were going to put him up in all these amazing hotels and he was going to play this sick tennis tournament. And he offered, you know, for Amal to go with him. I keep going saying Mel because I've got a friend called Amal. So he offered it to Amal and said, do you want to come with me? Which, hell fucking yeah.
Absolutely. She's
do you
want to
come with me while I play a big tournament out there? So for weeks and weeks, I think it was about 6 to 8 weeks, they planned this trip, where they would stay, when they were going to fly, all this kind of thing. And things were now getting, with this trip, now being planned, it was getting more and more
real
because he must have been shitting himself, because how was he gonna fund this trip? This was like, he's gassing this girl up, this girl's thinking she's gonna have this big ball, but he's getting closer and closer thinking, how am I gonna do this? But I think he doubted himself.
No, that's the thing, I suppose, with all the lies, these lies are all leading to this one thing.
Yeah.
And he's been able to, like, get away with it for months and months and months and months with, you know, with that $9,000, he was be able to do something, you know, he got the car, he's covering himself enough.
Yeah.
But then when it gets to that date that they're planning, what's he going to do?
Mm-hmm, that's it. So, I was, like, putting myself in issues, thinking, God, he must have been shitting himself now, getting close. But he desperately needed the money for this trip that he was planning.
Yeah.
On Sunday, July the 25th, 2004, things were about to take a horrible turn. So,
I'm scared.
In the afternoon, dead normal, Brian went to the tennis club with his dad that afternoon. Many witnesses seen them together.
Yeah.
Also, a few people had actually said later on to police and stuff that his dad was, you know, boasting at the club to people how Brian was doing so well in school and he was really proud of him.
But he weren't going, oh, he's going to LA to do
opening
of something.
No.
He was just saying because he's a straight A student, which is what you would do.
Yeah. So he was at the tennis club with his dad having a nice afternoon. Later that afternoon when they got home, Brian booked 2 tickets business class from Manchester to New York JFK Airport. The tickets, like I said, were business class and they cost around £5,000. So we used his dad's credit card to book these tickets. He is ruthless.
No, like, I know. Ruthless. It's poor mum and dad.
So we used his dad's cards, and obviously, the little tit, his mum and dad found out about it pretty much straight away.
I was going to say, yeah.
And they also, all the plans of him about to take a mile away kind of unraveled. They found out about it. So they put the foot down and they're like, you know, this cannot happen. But this was a turn for Brian, as every single lie that he has told a mile so far, like you said, he's half managed to get away with.
Yeah, he has.
So for him, you know, the jewellery, the car, the fantasies that he's created. But now there's a spanner in the works, and that spanner is the mum and dad. And I think he was that fixated on this fantasy that nothing was going to stop him.
Oh, God, yeah. He's carried this on for months and months and months.
So his mum and dad were not going to get in the way. So his parents were now doing everything they can to try and stop him. But like I said, that narcissistic side of him, nothing is going to stop him. I feel like he just reached the point of no return now with his parents. So somehow he had to stop them. So a row has broke out in the Blackwell household that night.
I'm scared.
Yeah. Brian has hit his 71-year-old father, by the way. He's like a cute dad. His 71-year-old father over the head with a claw hammer in the living room.
And right, then wait.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I can't find anywhere, by the way. Like, I've looked on all different things. I can't find where this claw hammer came from.
I was just about to say, did he just whip it out of his pocket?
What, in the living room? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, but then you've got to remember, like, dads usually have, like,
doing
a toolbox.
Yeah.
Or, like, in the garage, they've got, you know. I know where I can find a claw hammer in ours.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Well, I don't know if it's a claw hammer, but a hammer.
But
claw
I don't
hammers
know.
With the little spokes.
At the other side.
Yeah, the other end. Okay.
But I don't know. I find that, like, I don't know. I can't find that piece of information, but...
Because I actually figured, like, that is quite important because it's you need to know...
Was it, like, premeditated?
Yeah,
like,
I don't know. Snap. Did he plan it and put it somewhere so that when he knew it was about to kick off, he could just reach for the hammer? Or was the one there and he acted out
Well, later on, we'll see that, like, the psychologist people, it was one of two things, whether it was premeditated or it was an act of rage.
Yeah, like, not a crime of passion, but it's that area where he's just snapped. But go on, so he's hit his poor dad.
He's hit his 71-year-old father over the head with a claw hammer and then stabbed him 30 times with a 10-inch carving knife. again.
30 times.
30 times. Which is not like, oh shit, stabbed him, fuck, what am I going to do? It's like, I fucking
but
want
I
you
think
to die.
Doing that with your arm 30 times.
Well, like, actually,
like, I'm doing it right
I've
now.
Got one glass of red.
No,
I
know. I'm doing it now and I'm like 9 in, 9, 10. Like, I'm starting to sweat.
Yeah, like, it's a big, like, I'm always sweating. It's like a full on.
30
like,
times
die.
Is a huge amount. Like,
with a 10 inch carving knife,
that's
and again.
Overkill, that's that.
It, again, there's not that much information on this, like, case, so. You
which is surprising, really, but...
You can't... Well, you maybe can find it out, but from what I was looking on different websites and documentaries, I couldn't find this information out, which was something I straight away was like, well, where did this knife come from? I don't know.
Mm.
But he stabbed him 30 times. So then his mum, who was 61 years old, is obviously running from the kitchen, and she apparently had a knife in hand because she was cooking. He then hit her over the head again with the hammer, and he stabbed it around 20 times in the head and chest. So this isn't even just, well, not that any of it's okay, but in the head.
But this is what baffles me.
In the
how do you
head?
Stab in the head?
I
it's
don't
bone.
Know. I do not know.
He I mean, obviously, I know you can do it. There's plenty of cases where this happens. But whenever I hear about cases where they're stabbed in the head, I just think, like, ow to the person doing it as well. Like, that must be forced to, like...
Yeah.
Like, and does it go through the bone?
I'm saying, to stab anyone, let alone your fucking mum and dad,
no,
but to stab anyone once, but to stab them in the head.
See,
30
times, I'm gonna say
or
something,
20 times, that's sick.
See, I'm going to say something which is, like, you'll laugh, but it sounds a bit weird, but you'll know what I mean. I love cooking lamb, right?
Yeah.
This is going somewhere. And, like, you know when I'm preparing me lamb, roasted lamb, I poke... I stab holes in it to put my garlic cloves in and my rosemary. And, like, every time I stab the leg of lamb,
it goes
through me. Because I think, like, imagine that being, like, your stomach.
It has to go through, like, layers. Like
skin, muscle, I don't know.
And that's like a slab of meat, not a score.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So if it goes through me when I'm not killing anyone, I'm just putting, you know, garlic cloves in a leg of lamb. That goes through me because it's a sharp knife and the noise it makes, it's like, and then doing it in a head.
And even the chest, your
chest is ribs. You've got all your ribs protecting all your organs, so like, it's going.
And he stabbed, so his dad 30 times and his mum around 20 times in the head and chest.
So horrific.
I'm going to tell you like a little bit more, but. Obviously, later on, Brian did confess, so you're going to hear a bit more about that. But when he did confess, he admitted that what he did after he killed his mum and dad was he ran outside to his garden and he burnt his clothes in an incinerator. What is that?
I know an incinerator is like what you would use to burn things. Like,
but like, I just would never have one of them.
No, you haven't got an incinerator, but I mean, I could be wrong, but I think it's anything that will burn something.
It sounds dead, like American.
An incinerator. But that's what you get. An incinerator is what we get cremated in.
Oh.
But I also think the way they've described it is like he's created something that will incinerate the clothes, so it's burning the clothes. So he might have had like a bin or like a something in his garden, like, you know, like a fire pit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he had an actual incinerator, like an electric one.
He had an incinerator that was in the garden. His clothes, not their clothes.
Yeah. It's the evidence, isn't it?
So, Amal.
See, this is the other thing, sorry. That he knows what he's done wrong.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Well, he's a clever kid.
But this is what I'm saying.
Kid,
so,
like,
how can he. I don't know what he. I obviously don't know what he tried to claim is his defence. I don't know what you'll tell me that, I imagine. But already I'm thinking whether he did act out there and then and he had something nearby.
Yeah.
The fact that after the fact he's gone shit. I need to get rid of evidence, and he's burnt his clothes. He's in the right mind.
Yeah, of course.
At that point, whether he wasn't before, or, you know what I mean? It's interesting because a knife, if he's in the kitchen with his mum and she's cooking and he grabs a knife, that could be explained as his defence, like he acted just on a, you know.
A whim.
Interesting.
A Okay, so Amal at this point.
Yeah, so where's she? She packing?
She's packing. She's waiting for them.
She's like that packing for the suitcase, like getting to LA. Wait, it was LA, but they booked it to New York.
No, so I'm not sure about. It might have been Florida. They were going on kind of like a tour of America, so they were flying into JFK and then they were going off.
Yeah, they were going off from there. Okay.
So Amal was actually waiting for them at this point. Molly was like killing his mum and dad, but. She's waiting for him to go round to the house. Hey, I'm mad that he booked the flights the night before. That's a bit like last minute, isn't it?
That must have
been like, babe, are we going on?
Like, I need to go and get a tan and do my nails.
Yeah, and like the flight details, babe. Like, what's going on? He booked it the day before.
No, but you've got to remember, he's a master liar, master manipulator. Yeah. He would have been like, oh, the sponsorship have got in touch. They need me out there tomorrow. Like, it's all planned though, don't worry. I can fully imagine.
Yeah.
I can't imagine his frame of mind, but I can try to imagine his frame of mind.
So she's waiting for him to go round. So she's, at this point, she's tried to, you know, give him a few missed calls and he hasn't answered because he's fucking busy. She's actually sent a taxi round to the house, but he hadn't come out to it, so the taxi had gone. So she sent another taxi, which by this time, you know, he's behind his phone and he's gone out to this taxi. And on this occasion when he's gone out to the taxi, he's actually ran back in the house and pretended to the taxi driver that he was saying bye to his mum and dad. And when the police interviewed the taxi driver, the driver said there was not one thing out of the ordinary the journey.
Cool, calm, collected, I can imagine.
This fella didn't detect a thing.
That he just slaughtered his mum and dad.
At all.
In the worst way
imaginable. He said he wasn't stressed, he wasn't upset, he had like a pleasant conversation, he was a nice lad, there was nothing strange, nothing out of the ordinary.
Isn't that mad that like that taxi driver, when he found out,
oh my God,
he must have been like...
Can I put my leg down there? Sorry.
Go on, relax. He's probably gone home to his missus and gone...
Is that all right?
He's gone home to his missus and gone, I have just had a murderer in my car.
But hasn't had a clue.
And has not had a clue. That is so weird. Jeez. What a lucky.
So, but at the same time, Bri's probably made up because he's now got the credit card. He's off to fucking America from Manny in the morning. So he's like that way. So, yeah, he's gone and stayed in Amal's. The next day, Bri and Amal have flew to New York, JFK, and they actually stayed in one of New York's, like, finest posh hotels. From there they later flew on to Miami, Barbados. They went like around everywhere and they stayed in all the best hotels. Money was now no object. During the whole trip, you need to know that there was no remorse for what he'd left back home at all.
He was
having a ball. Like, there was no stress, no sadness. Amal said there was nothing. There was nothing she detected.
That poor girl.
Which I know.
Can you imagine?
I can't even. And the fact that it was like, obviously it's not her fault at all, but the fact that it was done for her kind of thing. Like, would have probably done it anyway for something else, but
yeah,
she must feel like, do you know what I mean? It was like...
But do you know the way, like, even our friends who get with lads and they turn out not to be who they think they are, they're on very, very small scales.
Yeah.
And we're still floored by it.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, when we find, you know, when someone gets at someone, then something happens or whatever, we are all still like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And that's the worst thing in the world that can happen to that person at that time. Imagine being Amal. And she finds out that all of this, these months and months and months and months of all these stories, was a complete lie.
And
to do it, he's absolutely butchered his mum and dad, like, and they're lying dead on the floor.
On your behalf, in Melling
or whatever it was.
It's so, I can't even imagine. So they were having, you know,
a great time.
A ball. Like, the trip of a lifetime, basically, like what, you know, some people would only dream of. So when they landed in New York, a limo met them. So this is like just on the scale of
what he was doing.
A limo met them at the airport and took them to a top hotel called the Plaza, and
Seen the Plaza, like, it's unreal.
It was in one of like the best suites that you could get in the Plaza. There's actually, like, if you wanna, I'm gonna put like links or tell you documentaries and stuff to watch. There's actually video clips, Kate, you need to do this, on the YouTube thing I watched, video clips of them
in New York,
in this plaza, like, look at the room, like, you know the way meet anyone of us on Instagram, we'd go in and we'd, like, I mean, it was years ago, but, like, you'd video,
you'd room, video
and
be like,
our bath, like, yeah, yeah, our balcony, yeah, yeah, yeah. And, like, there's Bri, like, smiling, big creep, like, literally, they're, like, having a ball. They're dead young.
No, the teenagers, yeah. Bless them. Well, not bless him, but bless
so there's
it.
Video clips of them, like, enjoying this, like, big posh room with a jacuzzi, big posh bar. It was actually the presidential suite where Kennedy and Bush had even stayed in there. Like,
of course.
So he was ordering roomy, like, by the minute. I'm talking
room service, if you didn't know what roomy is.
Room service.
Jesus.
Lobster, oysters, caviar, the finest champagne. Oh. This twat was, like, there was, you know, no holding back. He told her as well that the next day that Amal could go to Fifth Avenue and go to Gucci and Prada and buy whatever she wanted. Of course he did. Ball. So he was ordering the best champagne,
Shampoo. You got that Olaplex.
The best champagne and food. And one of the room service bills was actually recovered later on from the busies. And this was just for one night. It was $3,792. That was just for room service for one night.
Jesus.
So Amal must have been made up.
No, she's having the time.
Like, she is, like, blown away. So then they toured North America. They went San Francisco, Miami, Barbados. Brian, of course, the whole point of this trip was that he was meant to play tennis, but he told Amal that the weather was bad and that he couldn't play.
He got called off.
But she's not ass. She's, like, living it up in this
moment. No, she's down at least
she's
as bad
like,
a minute.
I don't give a fuck, mate. Do what you want, like, do you know what I mean? She doesn't give a fuck that he's not playing tennis, and it probably all just, oh, yeah, like, he couldn't play, but the sponsors have put us up here. So, yeah, he told her the weather was bad. But he really still, like, the whole time kept up this thing of him being an international tennis player. On a few occasions, Amal did say during the trip he did pretend to ring his parents at home and check up on them.
Jeez.
She said there was no sign at all. He was having a ball, he was happy, he was never under stress. There was no indication, basically, of, like, the horror he'd left behind. And the holiday had actually cost over £30,000. While he'd left his mum and dad's bodies to rot.
Well, okay, question. Mm-hmm. And you might not know the answer, but obviously this is over a couple of days / maybe weeks.
Are you going to say a block on the card abroad?
No. Well,
that's what I was thinking.
Well, yeah, possibly, but I don't know, if you've got a lot of money and you're spending it a lot.
Sometimes when I go abroad, though, it'll go like, is this you?
Yeah, no, they do. It's happened to me before where you get blocked, but no.
What?
No. The burning question in my mind is, like, have they not been discovered yet?
No.
And that's baffling me.
Okay, so
I thought you'd tell me this, but I'm already thinking.
They're just in the house, though, aren't they? Like,
yeah, but surely, like, I know if I killed my mum and dad, that'll never happen, by the way. But just saying. No, I promise you, like, I swear. I promise you, Ronna. No, but if I killed my mum and dad and left them on a holiday, within a couple of hours, because my mum's sister, my auntie Dot, who goes on a walk with her every day, will have rang, you know, one of my two brothers might have popped in.
Yeah.
The dog will be barking its tits off.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, that's, but again, I mean, we don't know people's circumstances, but I think that's quite sad.
So you're gonna kind of, like, find out now, okay? So they had this ball, this holiday dream.
Can I also say, Hannah says ball. I know people might not know what that is. Scousers will, but people who aren't scousers, when she says, I'm having a ball, they're having a ball. It's like a good time. Yeah, good time. Because people don't know bosses either. I'm saying, like, you've got all these international listeners, but you never know. We might have some Americans there.
Oh, my God, I'm picking my eyelashes out. why am I doing that? I'm sitting here even bright, picking my lashes out.
Go on.
Okay, so, obviously, this holiday was extravagant, it was amazing.
He's 30k in.
He's, you know, living his life. They've got him, okay?
And wait, oh, so he comes home?
Oh, he comes home. And he goes straight back to his home. Now, on a documentary I watched, he was saying that they think this is the police. They think that Brian probably expected to come home to some kind of like commotion around the house.
Yeah, of course.
But it was untouched. Nothing had been discovered.
So he's probably thinking.
He's
result.
Come to the front of the house and he's greeted by a neighbour who said to Brian, "Oh, I didn't realise that your mum and dad had gone to Spain." The neighbour said that he'd seen Brian and Amal standing outside his house with their luggage. And Amal had told the neighbour, like, "Oh no, we've been on a separate holiday," to his parents. So Brian had actually made out that they'd gone to Spain.
Right, okay.
She'd said to the neighbour, "They've gone to Spain and we've been to America, but they're not back yet." So the neighbour was just like, "Oh, okay, I was just curious. I was picking, like, the mail up for them."
Yeah.
Because he's obviously just
being a nice neighbour, yeah.
So Brian made out that he didn't have the keys, and so that he went to stay with Amal for a few days. But this is what confused me. He said that he didn't have the keys, but then he was back and forward to the house, and sometimes she would go with him, but I'm assuming that he didn't go inside the house. On one occasion, she said that she seen him play. She stood with him while he played a bit of tennis against the wall of the house outside, which is fucked up.
What?
Yeah, but he didn't go in the house.
So
he was checking in the house,
but he's not. He's like checking in the house, but he's not going in.
Yeah.
He's just making sure it's all safe and secure, type thing.
This is now, as well. This is a few weeks.
I was gonna say this must be a few weeks.
So the bodies are now like heavily decomposing. At some point when Amal wasn't with him, Brian did enter the property, which is so disturbing. He actually went in to the house and climbed over the bodies, which were left in the exact
positions. Yeah.
He actually climbed over the bodies, didn't look at them. He claimed later he didn't look at them. And he'd gone in to collect some post, and he wanted to take some photos and some like family memorabilia. So he took some memento.
But he was taking pictures, or he was taking
photographs out
in
the
frame,
house, like
that
nice photos of his family.
Yeah.
Nice things. So he took some mementos out the house. And one of the things he took was actually the hammer that he used to kill his dad. But I don't think, do you know the way you get some serial killers that take like a memory? I don't think he did it like that. I think he did it like, shit, I need to take this.
But the fact that the bodies are a big enough indication the murder weapon is important, but...
But he didn't... I mean, this is your mum and dad. Like, the fact that he could walk so casually past their body
that's
is...
fucked.
It's
but this is what... The other thing that I don't get, which is annoying me about this, is he's this big, clever person. He's a master manipulator, narcissist, pathological liar.
And he's left the
and he's just left them there. No,
off.
Not the murder weapon. Just the body's there.
I know.
It's
well,
a big.
He's thick. He's only a kid.
No,
know
but
what I mean?
He's not though. He's a kind of kid, really.
Yeah.
He's done so. He's done very adult things.
But
you'd think
it's
he
the
would...
narcissism.
Yeah,
He thinks
he's invincible.
He's invincible.
Yeah.
He can get away with murder.
Yeah.
As the term goes, because he's got away with too much shit, and I think they get on like a power trip to like nothing's good.
And he's probably thought it's weeks past, and I'm still
like getting away with it.
Yeah.
But how could you do that? Like go in and it's just insane. So he's gone in there, like I said, to pick up some bits,
and he takes the hammer.
The hammer, and then not too long after, he also went in to Liverpool College to pick up his A level results. And his teacher, Brian Christian, said he actually gave like a bit of a statement and said that he got straight A's in all exams. He seemed very normal on the day and very happy, just like all the other kids. And he actually made a complaint to the teacher that, you know, his parents had really let him down that day by not being there.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what a little horror.
He's a little shit, mate. Like... So now there was a problem. It was becoming a massive problem because now he's, you know when you're on holiday as well, you're in this, you know, fantasy, but you're on holiday, everything's great.
It's
like,
different, you're not in the country.
You're not in reality. He's back now, he's like, shit, like, kill me mum and dad before. So he's now back, and I think it's hitting home now. He's got a big problem. He's got two bodies lying there, and they're undetected. So at one point, Brian went into Kirby Town Centre and basically he approached two quite rough-looking lads.
Okay.
And he offered them money to burn the house down. But the lads, because of the way Brian looked, like these were obviously like two scallies who he approached.
And he's well-to-do.
He stood out like a sore thumb in this town. He was like a posh kid, like... Mm-hmm. They straight away thought he was an undercover busy.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
So they didn't...
They're like, yeah, big time.
They did not for 1 minute, like, go through with anything he was saying. And he'd offered the money to burn the house down, and he told them that he owed money to a drug dealer, and he was having meds with the drug dealer.
Okay.
And the drug dealer lived at the house, and he wanted to burn the house down. But these two lads were like, nah, this kid's, like, again,
definitely,
like,
yeah.
He's a busy... So now, that, I think the, I'm not sure how that come about, but I think the police must have spoke to them later on. Okay, so by this time now, he was desperate, and the neighbour, the next door neighbour, was called Pete Boyle.
Okay.
He was getting really concerned about the Blackwells, and they'd been on holiday for weeks, and that wasn't really like them, and he was just concerned as the mail was kind of like building up on the porch, and on the front step there was just mail.
Yeah.
So being like a nice neighbour that he was, he thought they were still away on holiday, so he actually decided one day to go round there with his daughter, and he was going to post all the mail that was overspilling through the letterbox. As him and the daughter have gone up to the letterbox, he said it was when he lifted the flap that the smell...
The smell.
...has come out. So he said, and you want to watch these interviews, Kate, like, after this, you need to go and watch it. He was just this dead nice scouser that lived next door. He was like, what the fuck? Yeah. I opened this letterbox and imagine the smell.
No. And you think, even though a lot of people haven't smelt that smell,
mm-hmm.
I think it must be from, like, all the things I've read and seen and listened to. It's a smell that you just kind of know what it is before you eat, like, do you know what I mean? It's one of those smells that's like, that's not a smell I've ever smelled before.
No, like, you can't
you
imagine.
Just,
can you?
Yeah. Oh, go on.
So as him and the daughter were approaching the house, he didn't see anything out of the ordinary apart from this mail. But as he's lifted the mailbox up, the smell's hit him. So then they've stood back, and as they've stood back from the letterbox, they've noticed that the inside of the door was moving, and it was covered
in flies.
Yeah. So.
I was gonna say it must look black, but then the black must be moving.
It was moving. So then they've stood back even more, and they've realised that every window in the house was black, covered in flies. So then, at this point, he said he's never actually been in their house before.
Yeah.
They've decided to climb round the back
and
go and look into the kitchen.
Yeah.
And he said as he's looked through the kitchen window, it looked as if their floor was just black marble. But as they've looked closer, the floor was moving. It was just a floor of flies. So the windows and the whole floor, this is through the back garden, they've climbed over, now they're looking through the kitchen, and they've seen that the floor was moving. So straight away, you know, this isn't...
Yeah, you know, that's not a good sign.
In 20 minutes, the police arrived to what they can describe as a most horrific crime scene. The disturbing scene of two bodies that had been left for 6 weeks. Where they had been killed, they were left there and they were heavily decomposed.
I was going to say that they will be nearly liquid.
I mean, they were that decomposed that the police, by looking at them, could not recognise it. Had to be, you know, with a
I was going to say, because they will have swelled and then leaked. And
they had to leave it for, like, a post-mortem. They didn't have a clue what had gone on.
Yeah.
So straight away, they've tracked Brian down
to
inform him of the death.
So can I just say, sorry, this whole 6 weeks, he's staying with...
And back and forward to the house.
Yeah.
And you've got to realise that the actual neighbour has seen them at some point, hasn't he? So they've tracked Brian down to a Mel's house, and they broke the news to him. The police said that when they broke the news to Brian, he did react like any normal person would. He was very upset, very disturbed, he was stunned. But then he did start to say, nah, you're wrong, like, it couldn't be them, they're not either in Spain. So he started kind of saying, no, you've got it wrong.
Yeah, you've got it wrong, yeah.
One police officer said, police wanted to speak to Brian as well, because although he wasn't a suspect at this point, it was like they knew he was the most like likely person to have last seen them alive.
Oh yeah, of course. He's the only child, yeah.
But one police officer said that, sorry, I can't get my words, I'm like, one police officer said that while, like, talking to Brian and consoling him and all this, proper out of context, Brian did ask one officer, which I just think, like, again, it's thick of him.
What did he say?
He turned around to an officer and asked, is prison cold?
What?
Yeah. And at that point, he was arrested for the
murder. I was going to say, yeah?
Yeah.
What? What?
I know.
Like, after, you did, good job
yeah.
He did, like, fucking hell, but, duh. Like, why would you?
I know. And you know what's so sad, Kate? Like, we'll post the pictures and stuff, but when you see his mum and dad, they're so cute.
No, I've got a vision already in my mind of what they are.
Oh, it makes me so sad, but he asked his prison called the fucking tit. So,
well, thank God.
Duh. Yeah. But yeah, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just think, Brian. So then this busy was like, oh mate, get him. He's a weirdo.
Yeah.
So he was...
Sorry. Just moving my feet, sorry. I've got pins and needles.
I know, I'm like, put my legs all over there.
Go on.
Oh, that's it. So he was then arrested on suspicion for murder.
Okay.
Throughout the questioning, Brian became a lot more cocky and comfortable. He felt he could lie his way out of any situation, as we know, and he was very, very clever. Brian did say this, quote, I've been asked a number of what I consider slightly irrelevant questions. I should be classed as a witness more than a suspect. Police carried on going through the house while he was being questioned, and obviously Amal's house.
Yeah.
And at this point, they did find a bag at Amal's house, and the bag did contain the hammer and the keys to the house. Now, this was where they had him, because the whole time...
He said he hasn't had them.
He's been telling the police he's locked out, he's staying at his bird's, and he couldn't get into the house. And at one point, I forgot to mention, he'd even gone... with Amal to his mum's house to collect some wine from their wine cellar to give to Amal's mum as a thank you present.
Jeez Louise.
So she knows that he can get in this house at some point. This is what baffled me, because he went in to the wine cellar.
But you've got to remember though, like, she
must just be waiting outside.
No, but she's got no reason to think and question. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's probably thinking, oh, that's a bit weird, but... She's not thinking, oh, he potentially could have killed his mum and dad. And,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But
as soon as they found the keys,
they had them. Yeah.
So they were like, look, mate, we found the keys. You've been telling us you can't come in. And as soon as they went to him, he confessed the murder. So now, okay, so Brian then confessed to the murders.
Good.
So what I'm going to do is we are going to link to our Instagram.
And we'll put it on, like, the show notes.
Because there's an actual, like, you know...
Recording.
A tape recording of him confessing, and it's just fire. Like, you need to listen to it. So basically, in this confession, he said that he hit his dad with the soft side of the hammer. He then said his mum had ran in, and he said out of self-defence, he'd hit his mum and dad. He starts crying. He says that... he actually said, and this is a quote, I couldn't believe someone could die so easily. It's like, Bright, you stabbed them fucking 30 times in the head. What do you mean, mate?
Jeez.
Like, but he actually said, oh, I couldn't believe it. He said he dragged his mum's body at one point to the bathroom and splashed water on her face because he didn't believe she was dead. And basically, he tries to go to bits in this confession. He made out the whole thing was in self-defence. Police knew, though, that the bodies had suffered wounds, which the forensics and the pathologist, in their opinion, was that there was no kind of commotion.
Yeah.
They had suffered.
I was going to say, it's obvious when there's a fight.
It wasn't a fight.
Yeah.
They had been the victims of a violent attack. His dad, the pathologist and forensics, has said the dad had actually been, you know, victim to a violent attack while he was sitting in his little armchair. Bless him. Yeah.
So he was sat down.
He was sat down. So there was no evidence of any kind of upturned furniture, no commotion, nothing like that.
Yeah.
So please go to the Instagram and have a look at this confession, because it's fucked. Police said while they were interviewing Brian, it was really, really difficult to see any remorse because he was a very manipulative person. So
I was going to say, he probably knows how to, like, turn on the waterworks.
They said he was always saying what you wanted to hear. Was his upset real? Was it?
Yeah.
No one knew. And again, it's the narcissism thing. 2 days after his arrest, he was charged with the murder, and no one from his school or anything could believe it. His teacher actually said, it's such a cliche to say it, but he would be the last person
you think of. Yeah. Oh.
But I think in this case, Brian just didn't want anything to stand in his way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Brian then wrote to Amal from prison. After first refusing, she then agreed to go in to meet him. I think she wanted the answers. She describes him when she went in as
being... Wait, so they let her go in to see him?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Well, he asked her, and for a bit she said no, and then she agreed. So she described him as being in denial. She said, you know, she couldn't believe what had happened. She'd seen no signs. She felt so guilty.
She'd be flawed. I was going to say.
Girl.
You can't even imagine what she's feeling. Or, like, that whole six-week period.
Wow. Ugh. But then, I mean, he's an absolute psycho. But then, massive twist here. The psychiatric reports come back, and they've said that he's got a really... Well, it's not a massive twist. We knew this. But they've said he's got a really, like, severe case of narcissistic personality disorder.
Yeah.
Which made him obsessed with success, fantasies, brilliance and power. They said his killings were the result of a narcissistic rage and not of first-degree murder. So they said he had a...
So they said it's not first-degree murder.
They said it was a narcissistic rage because of, like, his mental state.
Yeah, and he was all his lies. It was all coming to light, and he flipped.
Yes, but what a lot of the people on these programs and stuff I was watching, still to this day, it was like, was it the fantasy that he created that collapsed? His holiday had collapsed around him, and his parents were standing in the way, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So he got rid of them, or was it planned? Were they always standing in the way? Was it always?
I think he knew it was always going to come to blows.
Mm.
He knew it was that much of a fantasy. It wasn't maintainable or achievable. He must have known.
Yeah.
He knew exactly what he was doing. Surely.
Well, Liverpool Crown Court accepted his guilty plea on 2 counts of manslaughter on the ground of diminished responsibility because of his narcissistic personality disorder. And
jeez.
Which meant he didn't have to face trial by jury. I know.
Isn't that bizarre, though? People get put up for trial for, like, so much less.
I know, and it pisses me off.
Jordan
is actual hearing. They said he did try and show remorse, and that ever since he was kind of, you know, put away, he was like the model prisoner.
They always are.
Like, he was the model student.
That's
he was
such a cliche. Of course
prisoner.
They are, yeah.
Yeah.
He knows exactly what he needs to do to survive and be the right type of person to be let go, you know?
So he was sentenced to life. Right, this is so frustrating, and this is where I'm going to blow your mind. Okay, so he was sentenced to life, eligible to apply for parole in 5 years if he made progress.
Wow.
Which is, how's that life then?
No.
Blackwell was sentenced to life imprisonment on the 29th of June 2005. According to The Guardian, Blackwell could have theoretically be eligible. So this was in 2005.
Eligible.
He could eligible for parole after serving just only 5.5 years if a psychiatrist decided he was fit for release. But the judge had stated back in 2005 that this was kind of like unlikely to ever be reached.
Yeah, yeah.
So in 2007, it was reported that Blackwell was imprisoned in Swinfen Hall Young Offenders Institution. The judge said, quote, "For a son to do this is almost beyond belief, but you are no ordinary son." But I feel like Bribers will love that.
I know, I was going to say that's feeding his ego right away.
And then I'm just going to drop a bombshell. Brian, in 2016, was released on a parole hearing. The parole board granted Blackwell's release. And this is where I'm just going to tell you a little something about Bri and how this all connects. So basically, I can't mention any names.
You can't say names.
Like I said, I'm dying to scream his name, but I can't. I've always been into serial killers and stuff, and I've lived in Essex and London for a good few years. And one of my friends is a stockbroker who works in Canary Wharf in a massive, like, really well-known, popular office in Canary Wharf, broken. And one day he comes to me and he tells me, Kate, that this is, like, a really good friend. He tells me that he's been sat down by his manager. So he basically shares an office with another company. So in this big office, it's two companies. So not in his work, but in the same office. His boss has sat him down and basically said, look, like, we need to tell you something. Like, I don't know if you want to stay here, but we need to tell you that there's actually
a convicted
like murderer that works in this office called Brian Blackwell. Now, he goes, I swear.
But why didn't he change his name?
He didn't change his name.
He's cocky.
Because I think, again, of the power. He's come out of that prison and he's gone straight Canary Wharf, suit on, job.
Earning fortunes.
Yeah, like, he's powerful. Nothing's going to stop him. Being in prison was just a little blip. He's back, you know what I mean? And basically, they got sat down and they got told that a murderer was working in the office, but not for the same firm. He was called Brian Blackwell, blah, blah, blah. So my mate half told me this, like, laughing, thinking, like, how mad is this?
Isn't this weird?
But I'm, like, a big serial killer, like, nuts. So I'm like, what? I've heard of this. So I've actually gone home that night and I've watched, like, a programme, like, Teens Who Kill.
Yeah.
I've rang my mate. I've gone, babe, you need to get on this documentary. You need to get on this. And, like, at the time, my mate's not really, like, doesn't watch anything like that.
Yeah, he's not into true crime and stuff, yeah.
He is now terrified. I'm like, this lad has butchered his mum and dad to death. Like,
and he's chilling in the same office.
So, honestly, it was crazy. But you can imagine me, I'm, like, every day I'm texting my mate, I'm asking questions. And I used to even, I've said this to Kate and it's so funny, I have got it on my phone somewhere. I will find it. I have said to Kate, I used to text this lad and say to him, get me a picture of Bri. And he would literally take a picture of Bri from over the office. So I can confirm that the Brian Blackwell you see on Google, this is the same man. Like,
wow.
Because I've got selfies of him on my phone. Because my mate was sending me them and he was taking pictures
on the slide.
I'd be like, get me a pic of Bri, get me a pic, just because I'm like, I can't believe it. And he would send me pictures and he looks exactly the same. He goes under the same name. And my mate, God, I keep having to like bite my tongue of his name. My mate would have like conversations with him. He said he was nice, he was a little bit strange. Like, sometimes when people would say, does anyone want something from the shop? He'd be a little bit strange about it. And then I started saying to my mate, like, I wonder what he'd say if someone said,
Brian Blackwell?
Or, did anyone see this serial killer last night?
But like, he's not a serial killer, but I mean, no, but like, you know, a murderer.
Did anyone see, like, Ian Radio? How would he react? Like, I was just so curious, but it never kind of got to that. And me mate actually got proper, like, shit up by it.
As you would.
Some people did actually leave, by the way.
I was going to say, I feel like that
news,
would...
But, me mate, like I said, I know this sounds stupid, but we weren't, like, really into things like that. He didn't take it as such a big deal until he watched the programme. Yeah. He was like...
No, I can imagine. Because to him, if he's not into true crime and he's not reading
about... He'd just be like, oh, he's, like, he's been in prison.
Yeah, he's a criminal of some sort. But an ex-con. Not knowing, he absolutely butchered his mum and dad.
I mean, the thing that terrifies me is that Brian is out there. The one thing he did tell me as well at the time... was that if you look at any picture of Brian as well on Google, whatever, he's got like a distinctive mole on his face.
Yeah.
And one thing he did tell the office, the boys in the office, was that he was going to get his mole removed. And that's the only, I mean, obviously, Brian didn't once let on to these people of who he was or anything.
Yeah.
But that was the one thing to me that made me think, maybe you... Okay, you're keeping your name and all that, but that's the one thing you maybe...
But I think it's the opposite, though. I think you change your name.
Yeah, of course.
But he's like, oh, I'll keep my name, but I might get this mole removed.
Mole removed, off my cheek. And he did tell these work boys that. And that was something that was the, you know, I know he's not a serial killer, but I keep calling him that, but that was kind of the most close-to-home encounter I've ever had with a murderer, because that was, like, one of my best friends at the time. And he was telling me that he worked in an office, and I keep going on, in Canary Wharf in London, like the financial
district of London,
and he's out there now, and he's been released, and he's out there now living his best life. And you know what I think? Imagine you were a bird, and you went on a night, and you necked Bri.
No, I know, and I'm dating
him. You shagged Bri. And you did not know, Kate.
Well, no, this is the thing that scares me about, like, online dating and all that. Like, you just don't know who people are. And, like, people have a shady past. But imagine finding out the shady past is that he killed his mum and dad.
And it makes me sick to think, you know, people can argue and all that, but people do go inside for drugs and all that for years and years. This lad is out now. And
yeah, he served, what, 10 years, was it?
He's dangerous because there's no remorse.
There's no, and he's a psychopath. Type,
you know, he probably would kill again because if something gets in his way, he'd remove it.
You don't just all of a sudden stop having narcissistic personality. Yeah, so you don't all of a sudden stop being a liar.
And it kind of shows that, doesn't it? Like, that he's got out of jail and gone straight into, like, and you need a big ego to be in that stockbroker.
Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? He's gone straight into that power role. So, yeah, that's why I told Kate this straight away when we met. And I was like, get on this. So I really, really wanted to do this case because I am going to find, obviously I can't put it on Instagram and that, but I'm going to go through my, I'm going to go through my camera roll. And I am going
to
find...
You need to find those pictures.
These pics of Bri, because they are on my phone, and it will give you the creeps. Like, you need to watch these documentaries.
No, I will.
And then I'm going to send you, because he looks the exact same.
No, I can imagine.
So, I don't want to, obviously, put my mate's name out there, because Brian is on the loose, and I don't want him to come murdering me mate.
No, I didn't even say that out loud. Jesus Christ.
And where is Amal now? All I could find out is that...
Well, she shouldn't be looked for, I think.
No, I know.
I know, obviously, you wanted to see what she's up to now, but please don't...
All I could find is that she's in Nottingham University, and she does return to Liverpool for holidays, and she's now rebuilding her life, which is great, and that was in 2005, so... Yeah. So that is the end of Bri.
Wow!
You can watch the only... okay, so I remember there is a few podcasts out there on Bri, which I just found on Google. I didn't actually write the names down. Years ago, when I watched it, it was and this is the one I told me mate to watch, which gave him the creeps. It was something like, you know, one of them series, like Teens Who Kill.
Kids Who Kill.
It was on one of them. He's got his own episode. And then there's another one called Killers, which was... It was just on YouTube. It was like 50 minutes long. Killers, Brian Blackwell. Or UK Order Files, Brian Blackwell. And yeah, there's obviously articles and stuff you can read. But it was so close to him. And yeah, that is Brian.
Jeez. Well, go ahead, Han. Yeah. That was excellent.
Did you like that one?
I loved it. I love it when I don't know something about a case. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's my favourite thing when... Obviously, I love discussing known cases as well, but when it's a case that I didn't know anything about other than when Hannah explained it,
Sorry.
When Hannah explained, like, oh my god, my mate worked with a killer from Liverpool. We didn't go into it in loads of detail. Yeah. So this is the first time I've heard it and blown away, hon.
I'm just actually, like, while we're still going, I'm just going to show Kate quick. I know she's probably seen it, but I am just going to show you a picture of Bri so you can, like, see. But see, like, this mole and everything. His eyes. He looked the exact same on these selfies, like, the same.
Wow, his eyes
are
dead.
He hasn't changed one bit. So if you Google him and you just happen to be around, like, London,
no, let's not
go near Bri Blackwell.
She's going to cause murder. We'll be getting lawsuits on.
I just can't believe that he's free. I just think it's...
No, I know. That's what
baffles me. I'm sorry,
me.
Kate, please, right, please, for 1 minute, because you are going to cry. Please look at his fucking dad, because he's the cutest dad I've ever seen.
Oh.
He just looks like a proper, like, happy scouse dad, like, down the pub, like, oh, lads, doesn't he?
Oh, it's so sad. It's horrific.
Do you know what broke me heart? That he was sitting in his armchair.
Don't.
Like, oh, it made me...
Because they are the most innocent
victims. Brian. I hate him. Well, he shouldn't be out. But, yeah, that is why, guys,
you don't talk to strangers.
Even though he was your son.
No, but even Amal, bless her. I mean, she went to know. You can't, you know, but... Jeez Louise. We didn't say it, but that's a story waiting to grab a bevy because it's
about
to get
heavy. I need to grab another one.
I know, you need to have another one. I need to go home. Jesus Christ. But honestly, thank you so much, Hannah. Had a great time.
Of course, babe.
And listeners, if you're still here, 4 episodes in, thank you.
Thank you.
If you're new here, thank you again.
And check out the Instagram.
Yeah, Don't Talk to Strangers podcast, where we'll give you updates and other little bits of behind the scenes and other information that we'll have going. But yeah, be nice to us. We don't know what we're doing. We're just rolling with it and we're having good time, aren't we, Han?
Always.
Well, thank you for listening.
We'll bring you some more
and we'll see you next week.
Bye.